welcome to another edition of the Photography Bar podcast. I'm Mark, and as always, I am here with Sarah. How are you doing, Sarah? You okay?
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you. How about you?
I'm okay, thank you very much. Cam does send his apologies. He had to go off and do something last minute, so that's why he's not with us today.
But nevertheless, emergency.
Yes, but just for today, we have a guest with us. Who is Christy Snell. How are you doing, Christy? How are you doing?
Hi there. I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Awesome stuff. Now, for those listening, Christy is the creative director at Chuck Studios, and really sort of specializing in the field of tabletop photography, food photography, and direction, advertisement, that kind of thing. Now, Christy was born and raised in South Africa, where she obtained an honours degree in film analysis at the University of Cape Town. She worked as a director's researcher before pursuing a career in food styling and then later as a director. She started working for Chuck Studios in 2018 as a tabletop director and food photographer, and now holds the position of creative director. Well done.
Thank you.
No worries. Moving into the role of creative director was an obvious progression, as she practically carved her own colourful, art-directed and emotional space in food advertising, where she seamlessly connects brand values to images. She's now one of the most sought-after talents in her field and has worked with such brands as McDonald's, Subway, Tropicana and New York Pizza, which I'm sure we've all heard of, probably because of your advertising, I guess. I just thought I'd start at the beginning, if that's all right, Christy. You started in South Africa, you're now in Amsterdam, is that correct? Yes.
Yep.
Excellent stuff. And you started film analysis, and you had a degree in film analysis before moving into the field that you're in. So first off, what is film analysis? What where did this start from? Where was this love of film come from?
Well, that's an interesting question, because of film analysis is a quite an academic subject, as opposed to what I am now doing, which is very commercial. I've always had a deep passion and love for film. And before going to the University of Cape Town, I was living in the UK, actually.
Oh,
yeah, just as a 2-year gap year. And okay. As much as I loved doing that, it wasn't the best kind of, there was not really much of a career that I was doing. I was just, you know, touring around and enjoying my life as a young person. I was 19 at the time. And then my mom, my mom, who is a great inspiration to me, I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but actually is the truth. She found out that the University of Cape Town was doing a course or a program in film. And when I went there, it was actually relatively new for universities to venture out more into something that is less academic, as in film.
Yeah.
So she enrolled me into the University of Cape Town because she felt that it's enough of me just not doing getting a proper degree or something, just, you know, partying along in London.
So you had that, you need to think of your future conversation with your mum. Is that basically what happened there?
Yes, she said that exactly. I had to think of my future, and I accepted it because I was like, oh well, I love film so much, so I'd love this degree. And off to Cape Town I went, because I'm originally from Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and studied in Cape Town, and film analysis is when you look at films and you analyze the themes and the choices directors have made. You have auteurs, for example, like Scorsese, Woody Allen, Spielberg, where they choose specific tropes within their films. Scorsese always is in New York. Woody Allen's always in New York. So we analyze the choices that they make.
Oh,
I find that really fascinating, actually. That sounds incredible. It sounds like a really fun degree.
Yeah, it was an amazing degree. I loved it so much, you know, and it was paired a lot with English literature, which I also have a undergrad in. So in terms of adaptation and how is a book from one medium transformed into another medium. And people really get quite upset about that subject. You know, there's like, oh, it's nothing like the book, but they forget that it's a totally different medium and we should be analyzing
it. I was just saying, you have such a short amount of time as well when we're comparing a book to a film. You know, a book is so long
totally.
In comparison.
And the director itself has to a writer exactly has these opportunities to describe the setting, the scene, the lighting, the personalities, where a director has to do that visually. So as an audience, perhaps you are missing those wonderful subtleties that directors put in, whether the person is filmed behind glass, in front of glass. What does that make you feel? What does sound do? Is that giving you the sense of excitement or thrill? Whereas a book kind of writes that in for you. So it's an easier medium to kind of absorb as opposed to film.
And do you find that the skills that you learn in this degree sort of helped with the sort of transferable skills to tabletop photography?
Oh, 100%. Just because, like, now when I write a treatment, and as a director, when we pitch for jobs, so we don't just land an advert and then we get to make it, we have to we get scripts in, and other companies have also got the same scripts in, so we have to pitch for the job. And the way you kind of usually win it is by offering unique or new ideas to the script. And if you come from a film background or studying film, you kind of understand what these great directors have done and try and implement that into your script. So whether it's special lenses, a nice specific like cinematic style in terms of lighting, all of that can help you win a pitch.
Very good. So, because you were also sort of a director's researcher as well before coming into this.
Yes.
I'm assuming all that kind of melds into what you're doing now, learning those tropes and was it quite hands-on on the studio floor when you were researching, or was it just for the director before the shoots happened and things like that?
Yeah, so as my career started in South Africa, generally in South Africa, if you want to become a director, so while I was studying at university, I realized I actually wanted to become a director. Mm. And the way that you get into it, not all the time, but the most common way is that you go to a production house and you start off as a researcher for directors, and then you help them win the pitches. So you do all these, you bring in all these ideas for them. Of course, they fine tune them and, you know, make them workable for the scripts and stuff, but that's how you get your foot in the door. And then through that, there's a bit of mentorship, and then they will give you the smaller scripts that you get to then work on yourself as in the treatment to win.
Okay, so then that all leads on to very nicely to what you're doing now. So were you when you moved over to food styling, and then because I think you did a lot of food blogging, didn't you? Before Chuck, were you doing that in South Africa, and then
I was doing it in South Africa. Yes, I was doing that in South Africa because, you know, as life is, you never know what curveballs it throws at you. I didn't actually like being a researcher. I didn't like the director I was working for. He was not the nicest person to work for. And and he kind of at one stage made me hate the industry. Now I realize it's his in projecting and wasn't necessarily me. So I've always loved food. So I thought, well, I'm going to just start a food blog, because I actually, at that stage, it was very popular. And I thought, why don't I just start a food blog and just do my own photography? That way I can still enjoy certain elements of what I studied, but also just not on a commercial level. And as I was doing that, I started creating a portfolio and realized, like, perhaps I should be a food stylist. That's how I got into food styling, is that my food blog opened up a lot of doors for me because people really like my food, my blog, and the images specifically.
That's cool.
You've taken your two favorite things and built a career out of it, which is incredible. Not many people get to sort of put their favorite things together like this and then live them through career.
Exactly. So I was quite lucky, but it was quite a hard work, and food styling can be quite competitive. So you have to also, again, I started off as an assistant food stylist until I could become my own and, you know, work up my own that kind of clientele.
So basically learning your trade before sort of going out on your own.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, excellent. And then obviously the move to Chuck. I mean, how was that? And obviously you were in the UK before you went back to South Africa and Cape Town. But, you know, I've moved for jobs, but it's within the same country, so it's not really been that much of an issue. But moving from South Africa to Amsterdam must have been quite a thing for you, especially when you're moving over to a job where it must have been quite a, great job to get. How was that for you? Obviously moving culturally, and obviously this new job, it might not last, you might not like it, and you might have to move back. How was that for you, that part of it?
Well, actually, I didn't move to Amsterdam because I had gotten the job. I moved to Amsterdam because I wanted to move here. I fell in love with the city when I visited here. And eventually I got the opportunity to move here through other ways. And I actually got the job at Chuck Studios. At that stage, I was still a food stylist in South Africa, and I knew that Chuck Studios was a great company in terms of tabletop and food photography and film. So I approached them as a food stylist, and they looked at my portfolio. And at that stage, I was also making recipe videos, and they liked my work so much that they said they don't want me as a food stylist. They want me as a director and photographer.
Nice.
So I was just very lucky, I suppose. And
I don't think luck comes into this. I think it's your hard work and your skill set. Like, don't put yourself down in this bit. What you've done is incredible, and I think you've worked really hard for it by the sounds of it. It's not luck in there at all. It's all you.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I suppose that's sometimes a bit of a problem in the industry, maybe specifically as a female. We tend to feel that our accomplishments are based on luck and not on achievement or skill based, or maybe that's just how I feel.
Well, I mean, it's a difficult medium to get. I mean, photography and film generally, I find it's a difficult thing to carve a career in, because there's a lot of people who think they can do it and maybe not willing to put in the work, and it then doesn't work out for them. Yes, luck here and there is needed, but I think hard work is one of the big things. If you're really working hard on your craft and making your own vision, I guess, as well. It's all right being in your instance, a tabletop photographer, but making your work stand out from everybody else's as well is also incredibly difficult, because there are quite a few tabletop photographers out there. And to make yours stand out from other people's is probably half the battle, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose also having, to answer your question as well, where you said moving to a country with a different culture and everything. Mm. Because I'm from South Africa, one of the things is that we always assume that Europe is America, and Europe, the Western world, is like bigger and better, and everyone is just so talented and so good at what they do. So I suppose sometimes when I feel like, people recognize the talent in me in this country, was like, oh, this must be luck, because, this is Europe, and it is something that I have to get over. But when you grow up in South Africa, we are always looking at like international companies and places and being enamored by them. And that's not to say that I'm not impressed with what comes out of South Africa. I think we do an incredible amount of brilliant work there. Mm. But we do have this kind of stigma about us, that we look to the West.
Yes, I mean, I've heard that before as well, and which is kind of a shame, because like you say, there's a lot of good work from all over the world. But speaking about your work, I mean, obviously we've looked at your show reels, and by the way, listeners, do take a chance. We'll put the link underneath the episode. So do have a look at the show reel. It's really, really cool. But throughout running it, your work is, from what I gather, it's very vibrant. It's colourful. I'd say youthful as well. In what comes out,
it's so fun. It looks so fun. That's what it seems. I don't know. You'll have to tell us this, how fun it is to actually create these things as well.
Well, I love it that you say that, because my goal actually is to make people smile. Even though I work in such a commercial industry, at the end of the day, I don't want it to be taken so seriously. My end goal is just to make people happy and smile, and that's why I use so much color and try and tell a little bit of a story or something like that. Your question was, how do I go about it? Sorry.
Well, no, it was about really, no, not at all. It's just about how, was that something, the way your work looks, was that something you had from day one? That's how my work wants to look. Or was this something that kind of developed over time? And how did it develop, if that was the case?
I actually didn't know that I had it, that was my specific style. Luckily at Chuck Studios, they really do thrive upon us like experimenting and finding our own niche or just being ourselves. So I play around a lot, and it just came out that that was me, this colorful, bright, playful kind of aesthetic. And yeah, that's just how it actually happened. And very I'm nice. Really happy cool. that it happened that way. Yeah.
So through your experience, so obviously you said earlier about how you guys sort of pitch for brands. Yes. Do you feel you have to sort of change the way your work looks for a specific brand? I mean, I wrote down a couple of examples here. Obviously, I know you've done work for McDonald's, but let's say, I don't know, Dom Perignon wanted you to do something. Their style is very different, I'd say. Their brand is very different to McDonald's. It's probably not as colourful. And it's probably not as, I'd say, fun, I guess. If a brand, I don't want to, I don't really want to call a brand not fun. But if a brand is so different, do you feel you have to change the way you work in order to get the results to that their brief desires? Or is it more like they come to you because they want actually that fun element? They want you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of both, but on the whole, they do come to somebody who has a specific style because the brief suits that person. Yeah. You know, you're not going to go to Scorsese for a, you know, like a comedy or something. Well, I mean, you know, a happy rom-com or something like that. Mm. So in that way, yes, but at the same time, I do get briefs that aren't necessarily my style, but I do still try and implement myself as a little bit as possible in there, because I always feel like whether it's a stop motion element in there or a funny, I don't know, Easter egg that I can kind of implement into the film just to make me feel like it's mine, then that's why I do it. I mean, I managed to squeeze jelly into almost everything that I do except for McDonald's.
I love that.
Somehow.
So jelly's a thing then, yeah?
I love jelly. I don't like to eat jelly, but it's your trademark. Like, it's my, pardon?
It's your trademark.
It's my trademark, exactly. And as much as I can put it in, I will put it in.
Any specific colour jelly in particular?
Oh, no, I'm not prejudiced against jellies. I love them all.
Very cool. Very cool. And how do you then approach a brief? So obviously you're pitching for a client. What are the things that you look for? What kind of things do you sort of think about as far as stylistic, but also things like storytelling and lens choice, you know, all that kind of thing? Do you do storyboards? Do you go back to, you know, basics like that? Or how do you approach that?
Yeah, we most of the time do work off storyboards. And well, for us, obviously, like different, we're always searching for something that's unique. In tabletop, it's quite difficult to create a new kind of shot, because if we remember that food doesn't really move, so we have to make food move, and we generally shoot it then at high speed or super slow motion. So we have to try and figure out, how do we make that look more unique? Is it through a lens or lighting? And that way we can convince people that my treatment or my storyboards are better than another director's, because I've added this unique element that we feel that we haven't seen before.
Okay, cool. And is it just yourself with the story? Do you have a team with you? You know, do you have many arguments over what should be in the storyboards?
Well, of course we work with, you know, we have agencies that give us the brief and clients, you know, that are the client of the job. And then within our own team, you know, I don't film the stuff. We have a DOP for it. I have an SFX specialist. He makes these wonderful contraptions to make the food jump, fly, swirl and collide. And at times that can also, you know, we all work together and we're all very close. So there are a little bit of fights here and there that break out. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all love each other and we all want the best end result.
Of course, of course. And so when you come to approaching it then, when you pitch to the client, I mean, is it you stand in front of them and this is what you go through, or would you make a short video first, or... How do you do that? How do you do that aspect of it?
Okay, well, that's again where the treatment comes in. So in the treatment, we write a wonderful document that has our lighting references, video references, anything to convince them of what the actual film will, as close as it will look as possible. We often do present it to them. So we will go through our presentation, describe our lighting choices, lens choices. We've done some SFX, which is, you know, the machines that make the food fly up, and some test videos to kind of convince them of, like, this is what it would look like. And we try, it really is a sales pitch. And yeah, we try and pull out all the stops to try and win that.
Okay, cool. And I mean, obviously we spoke about there's quite a few people in the shoots and all that kind of stuff. Now, am I right in saying none of it is really VFX? Is that right? The things that you do?
No. Yeah. So most of the time, I mean, give or take, we might have to brush out or mask out like a rig. We call them rigs, the things that make food jump and spin and swirl. So that would be more retouching. But everything that we do is real. And this is why I love this tabletop so much, because it's real. You know, nothing can compare to me than the realism of tabletop. And that's also what makes it very difficult, but equally as rewarding, because you never know what food will do. You know, it's random, but beautiful.
I am interested in seeing some of these contraptions you talk about making food fly. Sounds very interesting, you know.
Well, we'll send you a link after this, because we do in fact have a page with it, and it is sometimes the rigs are more exciting to me than the end result, because the end result can be very perfect. You know, if you look at an espresso droplet and you think, oh, but when you look at what goes into making something so perfect and easy, I mean, they look quite, the shots actually make the whole process look easy, but it's incredibly difficult, because we're not talking about seconds, we're talking about milliseconds, you know, the split seconds, nothing that I can even see, because normal frame rate of filming is 25 frames per second. We're filming from 1,000 upwards.
Wow.
So we also only get to see it in replay, what the shot actually looks like, and then we have to, it has to be in focus, the movement has to be to work, food, like I said, does what it wants to do. So when, even though we've tested it, we've got these contraptions, food will still sometimes do something that you don't want. And also remember, physics is always something we're fighting against. So one apple is not the same as another apple, and it could just be the shape of it that would cause it to spin in a way that you didn't want, or luckily maybe do something that you had never ever thought it would do. And that's the great thing as well, is when you do it for real, you're like, whoa, that's freaking cool.
Yeah.
This is something I was actually quite curious about, as to like how much food could you actually get through when shooting just one particular product? And then, you know, are you using touch up on any of the food as well? So say you bruise an apple, for example, instead of using another apple, you're just going to make it look pretty in post-production, or give it a little polish. I'm not sure. I was kind of curious as to the little finer details in those sorts of things.
No, so we actually, this is probably the downfall of the industry in a sense, is that we don't reuse stuff. We use a new apple every single time, and we go through hundreds of apples to choose the most perfect one, because it is, again, shot at super slow motion. It is in the air, almost solidified, still. So you pick up every mistake. We can in post retouch to a certain degree, but that becomes very expensive. And sometimes you ruin the kind of texture of the food when you do that. So that is a downfall. But we often, you know, if you shoot chocolate, for example, we do not use real chocolate. We use prop chocolate, props. So not everything is real food. It's made to look like real food. There's companies that make fake apples and stuff, and fake chocolate bars. So those are reusable.
I thought you had a free lunch on your hands. Remember, the apples, chocolate, you got it going, work and lunch at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to go on to that, because I've heard, like, I mean, I don't know if this is myths or not, when it comes to sort of tabletop food, but, you know, people using mashed potatoes instead of ice cream and things like that.
Yeah, we've all seen these little videos that go around on your Instagram or your TikTok where they're saying, well, this is how we do it. And I was saying one to Mark earlier, is PVA instead of mayonnaise or something or other, these funny little things.
What is the most crazy thing you've used to substitute for food?
Oh, that's really interesting question, because a lot of food stylists are very protective over what they're using as the recipe.
Sorry, this is like asking a magician to reveal the secrets of the trick. Is
100%. They're very predictive over it. And I mean, I was a food stylist, but we've advanced so much from doing that. And also when I was a food stylist, I wasn't necessarily working as much on the scale of what I work at now. Most of the time it's less likely paint or mashed potato. It would be something still edible, like corn syrup, for example, is used a lot and colored a lot to make a kind of a caramel looking substance. But yeah, I'll get back to you if I think of something really fun, because I know people love this question, and I wish that I had a really good answer on the spot for you.
That's all right, don't worry. Bit ad-lib questions, so no problem at all. So gear wise then, because our listeners we have some gearheads listening, I'm sure we'd like to know, you know, lenses and cameras and all these kind of things. What kind of gear do you use? Has it changed a lot? Because obviously we've in the last few years, things have gone on to mirrorless cameras and things like that. Is that something that you guys have had to change with? And how's that been, that sort of crossover? What kind of cameras do you use, first of all?
On the whole, for photography, we still just use Canon. And it's not a mirrorless Canon, just like your 5Ds, but the 5DSR kind of thing for resolution. But give or take the job, we also will use a phase one if we need the resolution. I love the phase one camera. When it comes to, and then lenses would be your standard, like Canon lenses and stuff.
Yeah.
For film is where we really go all out. There we have, we own at Chuck Studios, our very own Phantom 4K. And for those who don't know, that's a camera that shoots super slow motion, originally designed to actually capture accidents so people could see the impact of where to place seatbelts and all that stuff. Yeah. So it's an interesting camera in that sense, because it was never designed for beautiful footage, but is a remarkable camera. And it does shoot at 4K to a certain degree of frame rate. I think it goes up to 1,000 frames per second, and then after that we lose resolution.
That's a serious bit of kit.
And remember, you can go up to I think it's around 2,000, you're still at HD, you know. So downfall of that is the more frame rate that you go, the higher the frame rate, the more light you need.
Yes.
And so that's always complicated for us. So we don't always build huge sets. We rely more on trans lights. You know, that's kind of a semi-transparent backdrop where we can shine light through it, which we print on. So we create an illusion of a kitchen or a kind of background. That way we can really light the set, because we need so much light when we shoot at 1,000 frames per second. Very hard to light a whole kitchen when you're going that extreme.
Yeah.
When we lower the frame rate, of course, you know, we also have the Arri Alexa that goes at like 200 frames per second at HD. Then we can light a kitchen. Then it's not so complicated. Lenses that we use for that, we've got the Boroscopes, the Lauers, the very extreme wide, you know, lenses, periscope lenses. We've got anamorphic lenses. We've got, I mean, the owner of the company, Olaf van Gerven, he is a real geek when it comes to lenses. So you name the lens, he has the lens.
He has it. Know. Okay.
Yeah. And well, it's really fun. We also have the Sony Venice, because that's also a high resolution camera. Because as you know, everything's got to be more resolution constantly. Yeah. I think that shoots at 8K. So 6 to 8K.
So with the 8K, I'm assuming that's so you can sort of like crop into the image rather, because obviously we all use 1080. Screens tend to be 1080 or 4K, don't they?
4K, these days. Yeah.
Exactly. That's more for special, you know, in, for example, McDonald's in-store use, they've got those long, narrow screens.
Yeah.
So you use it more for things like that, or to get all your formats, your deliverables, because in this industry now, you can't just deliver 16:9 as a format. You've got to do 9:16, 4:5, 1:1. So that way we can make a lot of deliverables.
Yeah. So that's for, I'm guessing as well, for things like social media as well, Instagram being 1:1 and all that kind of stuff. Wow. Do you find that's what it's more about now for social media? Because I grew up definitely, obviously, with adverts so say McDonald's, for example, seeing them on the telly more than anything. Has that changed now? Is it more directed for things like mobile phones, social media? So when you're being asked to do stuff, do you have to take that more into account now than what it used to be, maybe when it was more about TV?
Yeah, so at the end of the day, like, I also basically started, you know, being a tabletop director when social media was already out there. But the only, it's always been there when I started, but it hasn't really necessarily affected the boards in a way, because they just want both.
Right, I see.
So, yeah, basically, they still want the 16x9 for TV and stuff, especially the nicer, bigger commercials. Of course, you still get the social media campaigns that are on their own, but on the whole, they always require both.
Yeah. And do you see that really being more about, like, if you think about moving on to the future, you know, is advertising on telly sort of dying out a little bit in comparison to things like social media, mobile phones, that kind of thing? Is that?
I'm not too sure about that in a way. I mean, in the sense of, like, to go back to the question before and to relate it to this, it's more that they want, the boards that we get in now is that they want us to be influenced more by social media. So we get things like, can you do stuff like they do in TikTok, but right, for TV? So it's kind of interesting is that they want us to now use that as a route of inspiration to appeal to, like, Gen X or even younger generations. So, yeah, it's more a source of inspiration as opposed to just to only go that way because that's where advertising is going. And I think that with you know, wanting 4K to be shot at 4K, I'm assuming because Netflix is only going, you know, wants 4K footage, I think they're going to lend themselves into doing actually advertising as well. Yes. I assume they're going that way.
Well, I've heard that as well. I think if you're paying a certain amount, you won't have the adverts, but I think they'll do a more of I'm going to say cheaper, but you know what I mean? A lower tier in their pricing. So adverts.
Yeah, I find that that's happening with a lot of sort of streaming services, though, where advertisement is coming into it more and more.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it's ever going to die. It's just going to be in a different way. It won't just be purely on our mobile phones.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Do you see things changing anywhere else in this area? So the way that you do things, are there new sort of things coming in that you feel that you have to sort of get on top of to keep yourself sort of relevant in comparison to your competitors? Do you know what I mean?
That is a good question, because it's always, I think, in any kind of art industry or creative industry, we always are, like, chasing the newest, best thing, and we always want to stand out. That's one thing at Chuck Studios that we do is we've started this thing called the Colory Identity, where for brands, we create a unique aesthetic for them to stand out. And that's also a way for directors as us to also shine above the others by saying, well, we will create unique assets for you and make you stand out from the sameness, the pool of sameness in food and tabletop photography.
Cool. So you're constantly developing. Well, you have to, I guess, to stay on top, right?
Yeah, and I suppose, sorry, and also just the development of AI now has put everyone on, like,
What are your thoughts on AI? Because it's been a conversation on this podcast for a bit now. What are your thoughts? Do you see it as changing the way you work quite a lot, or do you see it as not relevant, or it's going to be more relevant in the years to come?
Well, I hate it and love it at the same time. I think it's, you know, with all technology, we use it at the moment more as a tool to as inspiration, actually. So we will type in certain things in Midjourney or something and get an end result and see how can we make that for real. So I do see it as a tool to just improve, you know, my career or my aesthetic, but rather than take over my aesthetic, because it still cannot take over the randomness that we get in tabletop or food photography, or, you know, when food flies in the air, you don't know what it's going to do necessarily, despite how much testing you have done. And you get these wonderful, unique moments that you either love or hate. And that's what I love about, you know, doing stuff for real as opposed for VFX and then now with AI.
Cool. And then finally, obviously I read on some of the information, you know, that the area of sort of tabletop photography in the area that you're in is very, very male dominated at the moment. So obviously, you know, not only have you had to sort of move countries, wasn't for this job, but in, you know, you felt you needed to come to Europe. How have you found that, obviously being a woman, is that sort of created your own voice in this, and that's made you different to maybe what the male counterparts are doing? Has that been a big thing in the development of your work and sort of getting those clients on board?
I think it definitely influences my style and the way I approach jobs. When I was also at university, a lot of the themes that I did explore was feminism in, you know, in film. So I love like Jane Campion and other, you know, feminist directors. And I think my aesthetic always has a feminine touch. I often look at certain things and I can kind of say that looks very masculine or that looks very feminine. And I don't mean that in a sexist way. It's just that the way that I approach it, I kind of always want this playful or romantic kind of element towards my images and the color choices that I choose. I have felt that as a female that it is harder to get into the industry as a tabletop because it's seen as such, and it is such a technical niche in film. You know, all the gear that we use, understanding SFX, I have to talk to the SFX person, the specialist, and tell him what I want. He shows me what, you know, he does something. And if I don't like it, I really have to understand the limitations to what the rig can do or what I'm saying and how I can change it. And I think sometimes as a female, we're just, you know, brushed off as like, you don't understand it. Whereas it's not necessarily that it's just, you know, what you're doing is not necessarily what I want. And I think with a female, most people don't like, it's not as easy as a female to voice your opinion and not come across as this, you know, evil or this mad woman, or, you know, there's these tons of tropes, you know.
Yeah, I would second that. You do have to be so careful with the language that you use and how you approach certain topics or people and things like that. It's a case of, yeah, you'll come across as this hard, evil woman in a way when you're sort of just trying to make your own mark and get it right at the end of the day.
Yeah, I do find that I have to ask things more than once. And I've seen other people that I work with who are directors and ask once and people jump, you know. I mean, I've been called hysterical before and I've never seen that word being commented at a man. Whether they get hysterical or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, these are things that we carry our whole lives in a way. And I don't think we've always been given the same opportunity. So we're always one step behind. So we've got to fight that much harder. And that's perhaps why we have to resort to becoming hysterical, because what I do matters to me. And it's not actually about necessarily that I'm hysterical. It's like, do it right because it matters to me. And I've worked really hard to be here and take me seriously because, and why? And this is also, I'm going to put this out there. I'm standing on my soapbox. Why is it a problem if you bring emotions into it? You know, they're always like, a woman is emotional. Yeah, emotions is not the problem here. Emotions means that you care about your job and you care about the end result. And like you say, it's passion. Perhaps we, you know, I not all the time do I go about it the best way, but it's out of, you know, the love for actually the craft.
But no one does always go about it the right way. It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, you can't be. I'm sure I've rubbed some people up the wrong way just because I wanted something done this way. And you know what I mean?
Do you find that there's a shift happening with the sort of male-female ratio? Or do you find in the position that you're in now that you're a little bit more open to who might join in the studios, trying to get more female perspective and make it more of an even playing field?
Yes, I've definitely tried to, you know, get more female DPs, female grade artists, female editors. The thing is, it's not that easy to find females in this. And I'm not sure if, you know, that's also sometimes the problem. It's like I have to rely on always having a male dominated crew because I cannot find the female representatives. And I'm not sure if that's a problem in the industry or females are not interested in doing that. But they are great.
Much further back when they're starting out at, you know, university, whether they feel that the same struggles and they're not quite cut out to push through them so much.
I definitely think that's largely the case. And I don't think that as females we're told that, like, hey, you know, I know the lights and the gear are very heavy to carry, but you can do it. And if you can't, just get somebody standing next to you to help you.
Yeah. And so what one thing, a bit of advice for anybody, male or female, who's either wanting to get into tabletop photography or is already in it, is there one sort of key bit of advice that you could give out to them?
I think that don't take things too personally. At the end of the day, you know, this is a really hard one to give advice because I wish that I could go back in time and give myself advice. I mean, on that note, I just want to say, like, when I get, like, you know, when I'm actually somebody who doesn't take things that personally, and that's why when I say to somebody, you know, can you quickly do this for me, and then I have to say it a few times, and then I, okay, this part's, yeah, this is a really difficult one for me to answer, actually. One advice, pardon?
Are you thinking perhaps it's along the lines of having that determination to push through and really sort of stand your ground and know your worth?
Definitely. I mean, that is, yeah, you said it really well. It is really just standing your ground and believe in yourself, and your opinions matter, and don't be afraid to ever say it. Like, just go, you know, nobody actually knows what you're feeling inside half the time, so just pretend. And I do that a lot. Like, okay, just act a little bit like fake it till you make it kind of thing. Which I hate that kind of saying, but
sometimes it's got to be done.
Well, by looking about how you got here, Christy, is you know, that you did a lot of work off your own back, you know, when you're going back to doing your food blogs and things like that, which kind of got you into this area. I always find that if I'm employing a photographer or if I'm interviewing one or whatever, and they haven't done that sort of bit before, the whole nine yards, they're just expecting a job straight away. And I think especially with certain fields, I guess like yours as well, which is quite niche, but you've really got to sort of really go for it heart and soul, and that means doing a lot of extra work. You know, if you got a job as a waitress or something, or a waiter, and you know, at night you want to do this food blog or whatever area of photography it is, you know, you've got to put the hours in, I guess. I mean, that would be my takeaway from it. I don't know if that's right. Or,
well, I mean, that's largely my personality. I never give up, even if, you know, it seems like it's really difficult. I put my all into everything, and I have always done it. It's just my personality. I hate failure. I hate mediocrity. So I have always had goals in my life, and I like to achieve them. And despite it being difficult or obstacles along the way, I just try and overcome them. So I suppose, you know, if I had to give advice, I'd just be like, you know, just never give up, just keep going. And looking back at the stuff that I have done, I see the how much I've improved, and how I look back at my stuff, and also with a smile on my face saying, like, wow, you were quite hard on yourself at that stage, but you achieved so much on your own, and you just never let anything bother you. You just carried on going forward and forward, and I think I just never wanted to fail.
Dedication, I think is the word there. Yeah, you say
it's 10,000 hours. Just having a lot of grit. I think that is actually all I can say. You've got to have grit. You know, grit over. You've got to have a small amount of talent. You've got to have some talent. We all know that, but largely you've got to have grit, and that's what's going to make anyone succeed. Is exactly determination and just grit over expecting things work out or fall into place.
So it's now not so much luck. You've said it yourself now. It's not luck.
I know. I was going
your
to say
hard work.
I was going to say I'm going to contradict myself saying
grit and determination.
It's really just hard. Very modest of you. You're very modest about your accomplishments, and you should really be. I'm sure you are very proud of them, but you should verbalize that as well.
Thank you. I like that advice. So I think you should also spread that advice to your listeners as well. Actually, be proud of yourself. Thank you.
Excellent stuff. Well, Christy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. Thanks ever so much for taking time out to speak to us. Please do stay in touch, because we'd love to have you on again in the future, seeing what things are happening, and, you know, if there's any crazy things you're doing food wise.
Yeah, you've got to get back to us on this crazy food substitute.
Oh, I can't wait to send you the images of the actual rigs, because when you see them and then there's gifs of what they do, I think that that's very enjoyable. Yeah, it's amazing. And thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed my time on your show.
I thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you today. It's been so interesting to hear everything you've done.
So, awesome. Yes, thank you very much, Christy. And everyone who's listening to this, please do go to our episode description, because we'll have Christy's show reel on there. But also, hopefully, we'll have these images of the of these contraptions as well. I'm really looking forward to seeing those. So, Christy, thank you ever so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
So there we go. I thought that was a really interesting conversation. What did you reckon there, Sarah?
You know what? I've never even thought about entering that kind of field, but she made it sound so fun that I want to do it.
I've never done food photography. I've done product photography. It was fine. I find it a little, I don't know, I'm just used to chasing people around and sort of having to sort of direct people all the time. And when it's a load of inanimate objects, you know, you're just placing them. And
yeah, but I think she's using food in a really playful manner.
Yeah.
A lot of movement she's talking about and a lot of colour. And that does sound like quite a fun, I imagine, you know, stressful at times as well, when you can't get that shot of the apple the way you want.
Yeah.
But it does sound really fun, the rest of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think partly as well, I mean, I think looking at her showreel as well is mainly the moving image rather than a still image. And yeah, I think that does create a bit more of the sort of the fun element to it, actually. I think if I was doing maybe product shoots that was more video based, I'd imagine that would be a bit more fun. But I've not done food. And I think as well, something that I've learned, I think food photography and product photography is actually a very different thing.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. I think your materials that you're working with, they all respond and react differently to whether it's environment, whether it's too warm or whatever, and you've got your mashed potato ice cream. Yeah. Compared to a few books and vases, it's a different ballgame completely.
But also having these like rigs as well, you know, these things are making food
really
fly.
Those.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing those. So we'll definitely get them up on our socials. Another thing as well that she said, and it was actually off air, we just had a little chat just before she left us, and she actually said this, you know, this, they are crying out for certain jobs, aren't they?
Specifically sort of the people who are sort of working the robots, essentially making the contraptions move, that there's very few people in that industry. And she said you don't even have to go to get a degree to do the job. You just have to have a little course. She said it's so easy in a way. She made it sound too easy.
Yeah. Well, she said about food stylists as well, that they're crying out for food stylists. But yeah, no, the robots, I mean, it's not something we spoke a lot of, because we spoke about like the contraptions for the food. But actually, she was saying about how these cameras are on these robotic tripods, I guess is the best way of describing it, which they move really fast with the camera on board. And it's those robots that need the technicians and the operators. And there's not a lot of people that, you know, they are crying out for more of these robotic operators, which I found incredible.
That was surprised. Yeah. I really thought that would be something where quite a lot of people are sort of going for that.
Really,
it surprised me quite a bit.
So it's nice that, you know, if you are interested in that sort of area, There are a lot of sort of inroads into getting to where Christy is now.
I know. What are you going to put into Google to find that job? Robotic arm operator. What's your Google search going to be?
I guess if anyone is interested in taking up a career in that, then send us a message and we'll forward it on, maybe. I don't know. We're not
it's
a recruitment agency.
Well,
we're not a recruitment agency, but I'm sure she would... give us the directions of where to go in order to
she's got to have all the connections.
Even just advice onto where to go. But yeah, I mean, and she, you can tell she works hard, right? I mean,
yeah, and you can tell she loves it as well, absolutely. Which makes such a difference. I think when you're loving what you're doing and that is portrayed through your work, then you do it so much better.
Yeah, and also incredibly talented. I mean,
you
know, there is definitely her in her work. You know, she is you know, what's the word? She came across as fun. I thought she was fun to interview. I reckon if a group of us with her went out to the pub or something, I reckon she'd be fun to be around. And that comes through in her work. Like, I mean, you mentioned it in the interview. Fun is definitely a thing.
I think I really love that little element where she tries to put jelly in all her things.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant, because you hear of sort of, you know, film directors or something that will, you know, Pixar do it. They put a little note to themselves throughout all their films, little characters and stuff. Yeah, okay. Have you not noticed it? I love that little tag, like, this is me, this is my thing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, it's like your name, but obviously in jelly.
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and like I say, you know, it's definitely a good example of, you know, you put your mind to it, you put your work into it, you do the extra mile. You don't expect things to land on your lap. You know, you've got to work for it. I mean, you know, that is a good example of you know, you get there. Of course, you've got to have the talent, but which she has an abundance.
Determination, but just to follow through and go through. I'm sure there's ups and downs with it, as there is in any job. When you're taking on a career path, there are going to be challenges along the way, and it's seeing all the way through to the end and seeing how well it can pay off as well.
I mean, the only thing I was a little disappointed with really was what she was saying about, you know, being a woman in what is a male dominated area. You know, she has to ask several times to get this thing done where a male counterpart wouldn't. You know, you do forget, because I think we pat ourselves on the back a lot about how we've moved forward from that, but actually it's still there, right?
It's still there, definitely. But at least now it's being talked about a lot more. Mm. You know, she's in a position, as she said, where she's trying to get sort of a more level playing field, to have more females coming into this field. And you know, opening up the conversation about it really does help. Mm. You know, men and women basically on how to work together a little bit better.
And I find it's kind of odd, I mean, in the photography industry anyway, you know, because obviously when we'd done the graduations, you know, with the group of us, I think you, Sarah, are one of three women on that team, I think.
I'm going to say two.
I know there's three in the team. So I can name you and two others.
Okay.
But the rest...
When I've been on a graduation, I've either been the only or one of two.
Yeah.
It sometimes does feel a bit like this token female.
Yeah.
But it's funny, you know, you take school photography, the industry I'm in, and it's so heavily female dominated. I think
I was going to say the same about family photography. It's
a case of, I think it's that patience level and that maternal instinct of working with children.
Yeah. I mean, I've generally worked with women, both weddings. You know, my second photographers, they tend to be women, and there's a couple of blokes, but generally it's women. I think the family photography thing, generally
it'd be really interesting to sort of touch upon the different areas of photography, whether it be family, wedding, underwater, tabletop, all those different subjects, and seeing how heavy it weighs on either side. See if there's a pattern that occurs in any way.
I mean, this is why I think I found it so disappointing and surprising, because I'm so used to working with women in the fields that I'm at. It's almost odd to be a bloke doing family photography, I guess. So when I then hear this stuff, I don't know, I'm just a bit naive on that, I guess. But
I don't know. I suppose unless you're having that conversation, you're none the wiser, are you?
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. But yeah, nevertheless, I think fascinating chatting with Christy. And
I'd love to get her back on, you know, down the line and see what else is sort of happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Well, I think that's everything for today's episode, Sarah. Unless there's anything else you wanted to say or...
No, there's nothing on my part over here.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you guys for joining us. I hope you found this episode interesting. We both certainly did. We'll look forward to speaking to you guys again. Bye for now.
Bye.